people to know that you don't have to live in agony through grief forever. So although the loss will always be there, you can heal your heart and live again, not just merely exist. And to come back to your passion question, that's what I'm really passionate about, Paul, is helping people live, not just function. And having been there in that, just plodding through the day, waiting to go to sleep because it blanks out a few hours. I don't ever want to have to be there again. And my heart breaks for anyone that's stuck there and then don't know that there's an option and a way to help themselves out of that.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose. What lies beyond grief? I've said this many times on the podcast and in other places, we're not getting out of this world alive. At some point, everyone dies, no matter how much we try to avoid it, it is a fact. At that point, someone else gets left behind. The real question is, how do we, as the person left behind, learn to live with it, and how do we move on? This week is Grief Awareness Week in the UK, and my guest, Carol Henderson, knows quite a bit about that. Not only has she learned to live with her own grief, she's also discovered how to mourn well and support others to do the same. But more importantly, as a grief recovery educator and heart healer, the message she brings to us is that there are many forms of grief. From the devastating sudden loss of someone right down to the grief we experience when the last chocolate in the box has been eaten. Carol married the love of her life when she was 20 years old. She relocated her job and left her family home to be with Kevin, who was 21. Together, they built an amazing life with nice toys, holidays and a big house. And inspired by their careers and happy life, they chose to forego children. And then at just 41, Kevin died of cancer after a very short illness. Carol had taken redundancy to look after him. When he was gone, she was a widow at 41, with no job and living in a big house miles from friends and family. Our conversation is Carol's story, and at the same time, we unpack what it means to experience grief and loss and her journey to become a grief recovery educator. No matter who you are, at some point in life, you will have faced grief in some form or another. But there is life on the other side. Carol found a new life, a new man, and a new purpose, so I can promise you a happy ending. Join me on this educational journey about what it truly means to live well beyond grief. Hello and welcome to another program. I'm delighted to be with Carol Henderson. And as always, there's a story to be unpacked. So Carol, thank you for taking the time to be here with me today.
Hi, Paul. I'm extremely excited to be here today. Thank you for having me.
So look, this is Life, Passion and Business. Where did it all start for you? What did you think you were going to be when you were small?
Well, when I was very small, I thought I was going to be a ballerina. I think in common with just about every other little girl in the 90s.
I don't know. I've had a lot of different answers on that one.
But as I got older, actually, what I really wanted to be was a pilot. And I remember a lot of my friends wanting to be air hostesses. I don't think they're called that anymore. Air hostesses, stewardesses. And I didn't want to be the hostess. I wanted to be up front and in charge of where the plane was going. So I remember my physics teacher kind of scoffing at the idea. My optician said, I don't know, your eyesight's going to be up to it. So there were a lot of...
It sounds as if you actively pursued the idea. What we're checking with opticians.
I talked to the opticians about what the requirements were. I talked to the RAF. I thought maybe that would be a way to. And in those days, women couldn't do that. A little while ago now. And so I looked at various ways of becoming either a commercial pilot or. And I really loved the idea of international travel and but being the one that was given the direction, if you like, taking control. And I left school and went and worked for a bank. So,
okay, that was okay.
No, I think, do you know what? Looking back, there are an awful lot of people telling me you can't do that. An awful lot of people telling me you can't do that, and you're probably not up to that, and you wouldn't be able to handle the stress. And there was and I'm sure a lot of well-meaning, but probably unhelpful advice given. And then by the time I got to kind of exam age and I was doing my O-levels, and which was the early 80s, and at that point the economy was in a pretty horrible shape, and there was an awful lot of talk about O-levels and A-levels and university degrees being a waste of time, and you really needed actual work experience to get anywhere. And that was the kind of the mood. So I actually left school halfway through my A-levels, because this was so the message that was being given, that A-levels and university is a waste of time getting to the job market, that I just left school and found the first job that came along, which was being a bank clerk. And I was utterly miserable as a bank clerk. And it took me a long time to find my own way after it. And it took decades probably to work out that listening to other people wasn't really serving me, and I needed to start listening to myself a bit more. So it has been a very, very interesting career trajectory, starting as a bank clerk. Then I sort of fell into selling advertising space in the local rag. And from that ended up with a marketing career, which I thoroughly enjoyed until probably the early 2000s, various flavors of marketing career. And then there was the big life event that changed everything. By that point, I was married. I got married age 20 to a fabulous guy called Kevin. But in 2006, tragically, he died. He was 41 years old and had skin cancer. And while I was caring for him, I also took redundancy. So at the point he died, I had no job. No kids, because we'd planned not to have kids, because we both were loving our careers at the minute, and Kevin never felt grown up enough to be a dad, and so it was one of those things. It was a choice. We didn't have kids. We had no pets because we both had a career and we didn't have time for pets. So at the point he died, I had no man, no job, no kids, no pets, and it absolutely felt like there was nothing anchoring me to the earth other than this stupid big house that we bought because we'd liked where it was, and it was way too big for two of us, and it was stupid big for just me.
Do you have family around you? Do you have other family around you?
Well, my mum was not far away. She was in Stevenage, which is about 30 miles, and a brother in London. And I did have, good friends. I had a good kind of support network, but I did feel incredibly alone.
But at the end of the day, isn't it? Look, support networks and friends are wonderful, but at some point you have to come in and close the door, don't you?
Absolutely.
And you have to sit down in your house, look at your room, and everything in that house reminds you of the man you just lost.
Absolutely. Everything. And everyone, people are always going about the clothes and the stuff. It's not the clothes. It's the little personal items, like opening a drawer and finding a post-it note that's got his handwriting on, or whatever the thing is. So it is everywhere. And the stuff that you'd stopped seeing as theirs because it's been on the walls for years, and suddenly you start noticing it again. So, and someone described it perfectly when they said it's quite easy to find someone to do something with. It's quite hard to find someone to do nothing with. And as you said, it is that Sunday night when you've shut the door and, maybe you found someone to, do a bit of shopping with in the afternoon or go and have a cup of tea with. But at some point you have to shut the door and be on your own. And particularly as I lived in this tiny little hamlet, which had 8 houses, a church and school. So when you shut the door, there was no street lights. It was in winter, dark, and you couldn't see any evidence of other human life at all. And I felt incredibly cut off. And I had no idea what to do with myself, to be honest, because I'd never had ambitions really to have my own business. I was quite happily being employed, But at the point I took redundancy, I was working for an event and motivation agency. I had planned to set up my own motivation agency. Now, as a recently widowed woman, you can imagine I couldn't motivate my own way out of a paper bag.
Yeah, let alone, I can imagine motivation was not high on your list of things to do.
Can I actually get dressed today, let alone, you know, think about starting a business and getting out there and selling myself, my services? So it was just, I had no clue. I was just overwhelmed. But what I realized was I didn't really want to go and help motor manufacturers sell more cars anymore. I wanted to do something that had a bit more meaning, because you do, when these big life events happen, you do sit and reevaluate what your priorities are and what is truly important. I thought, well, Kev died of skin cancer, which is the most curable form of cancer there is. If it's caught early, it's 98% treatable. Unfortunately, his wasn't caught early. And if it's ignored, if it's not picked up, then it's 98% fatal. So when we were looking for ways to help him, and when the doctor says go home and write, you will, you don't. What you do is you go home and hit the internet and go, are they right? So we've done a lot of research in ways to slow it down, mitigate it, etc. So we started looking at all the, you know, diet stuff and the holistic stuff and all the frankly weird and wacky and downright scary stuff that's out there in the internet. But I'd got very interested in food as medicine, nutrition, healing. So that was already there. We'd done that while I was caring for him. And then not that long after he died, my mum wasn't feeling very well, and she asked me if I could find someone to do a food intolerance test, because she felt that things that she was eating weren't agreeing with her. She'd worked that out for herself. So I did some research and I found this place offering food intolerance testing and trained to be a food intolerance tester. So it was a 2-day course. I thought, I can concentrate for 2 days. I'm pretty sure I can do a 2-day course. So I did the 2-day course, got the machine, and then it dawned on me I still had to start a business.
Yeah.
It's not just, I've got the stuff, people are magically going to turn up, I have to market this thing. So I started doing that, and then I also started a nutritional therapy course, and I discovered that working with people, while I couldn't, obviously can't cure cancer, but what I could do is help alleviate IBS and eczema and other things that are making people's lives more uncomfortable than they needed to be. Mm-hmm. And that kind of inspired me to start really working with other human beings, you know, on a much more one-to-one human level. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Meanwhile, dealing with my own crap still, you know, being a fairly new widow and incredibly lonely and all that stuff. And then by chance, I was actually reading an Amazon book review. Thank the universe for Amazon book reviews. Because I was reading this review that said, this book's okay, but it's not as good as the Grief Recovery Handbook. Okay, obviously, Grief Recovery Handbook. And it looked pretty good. So I ordered it, and I had to buy a used one from the US because they didn't stock them here then. And it came 2 weeks later. And it was the first thing that had made sense since Kevin had died. And I looked, and this book talked about people called grief recovery specialists that will take you through this grief recovery methodology. And I'm like, okay, there weren't any, because all in America. So it's written as a self-help book. So I did it. I worked through it with a friend, and it helped me enormously. And it was a real catalyst for me moving on and growing my business, because I was suddenly in a much better place emotionally. Scroll forward a couple of years, I had occasion to reread it. Mm-hmm. And that's when I found their website that said, you can train in this thing. So I emailed them and said, I'm from the UK. Which city has your best trainer? Because I'm coming in. I have to do this training. And they said, oh, you don't have to. We're coming to London in the fall. And I was like, oh, well, I quite would have liked an excuse to fly to California. Thank you very much. But okay, you guys are coming to London. I'll sign up. No, they didn't come to London. They came to Heathrow, which, as all Brits know, Heathrow isn't actually London. But because it close, meant a 2-hour drive.
Close enough, I guess.
Well, it is, except London.
For an American, it's close enough.
Heathrow's a 2-hour car drive from where I was living. So I did the training with one of the founders, Russell Friedman, and a conversation between him and I on that course. And then just a few weeks later, he said, "Would you bring this to the UK for us?" And I said, "Russell, I've been doing this for like 5 minutes." And he's, "Carol," he said, "we love your energy. We really want you to bring grief recovery to the UK." So that was 2009. And so then I worked with Russell and the other founder, John James, who trained me to train grief recovery specialists and help other people move beyond significant loss. And it's been the most incredible, heartbreaking, challenging, fabulous, appalling journey since then. And I've trained over 500 people from 30 countries to do this work. And
so this is a really silly question, but I'm going to have to ask it because it's part of my formula. But it kind of how I could ask this question of this thing, but I'm going to have to because it's just making me laugh even thinking about it. Where's the passion in all of that?
Where's the passion?
How can I be passionate about this?
How can I be passionate about watching people's hearts heals in front of my eyes?
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it, really? It's what you do. Yeah, that's it, isn't it?
The magical thing is, Paul, and it's really hard to articulate, this very elegant little program, which is not therapy, it's not counselling, it's its own thing. And we actually call it education. So we're teaching people a set of steps to heal their own heart. So I'm a guide in this. I'm a teacher. I'm not a therapist or a clinician or any of that still. I'm just saying, look, here's some tools. They've helped me. They've helped lots of other people. They might help you. And it's incredibly empowering. And I think that's why 10 plus years on, it's still fabulous. Because I think if I was not empowering people, I might have got kind of more fed up with it by now. But watching people take their own healing journey and realize that while the loss is there forever, the grief doesn't have to be, mm-hmm. is just the most extraordinary feeling. And I've worked with people that have had horrific losses, violent losses, multiple losses. And I've heard so much tragedy, which on some days does mean that I want to pick up the car keys and say I quit, because there are some days you think I can't hear anymore of this tragic stuff, and you just go, I quit. And in grief recovery, we always refer that to that as the car key moment. It's really quite hard to do when you work from home. Doesn't work.
No, doesn't really. But you know, I have a strange view on this sort of stuff, you see, because I kind of like, oh, it's the way it is.
Hmm.
You know, like people say, it shouldn't happen. I go, no, but it's the way it is. That's just it. You know, the universe don't care. The universe is what it is, and things happen. Buildings fall down, cars crash, people get sick. That's what happens. And it happens to any of us, you know, I've no doubt something like that will happen to me at some stage. It happens to all of us.
It does happen to all of us, and it happens to all of us multiple times.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Absolutely. My son left home last year. I didn't expect to be grieving it, and I was.
Absolutely. I actually, there's a gentleman I trained who was really struggling after his offspring left home. I can't remember actually if it was son or daughter. I remember it's offspring, because I said, well, empty nest isn't just a chick thing. You know, it happens to men as well. And
well, because I lost my best mate. And he and I have this amazing relationship. And and the lockdown provided us an amazing opportunity to spend lots of time together. We cooked together. We had our relationship already strong. So, you know, when are you going to go? I know he's got to go. I want him to go. I really want him to go. And I moved him into his flat a couple of weeks ago. But it's like,
because it's changed the nature of your relationship forever. And I think one of the things that really resonated with me when I read that book all those years ago was the definition of grief being the conflicting feelings following a change or end in a familiar pattern of behavior. So exactly what you described. Pleased for him, he's flying the nest, he's growing up, he's making his own way in the world. Your job is done, you've been successful, well done. But you're sad he's not going to be right there, and your relationship will change. You're still going to be mates, you're still going to be close, but he's not right there. So that change and that end in those familiar patterns of behaviour is resulted in those up and down. And I think that's one of the reasons grief can be so overwhelming, is you feel opposite things at the exact same moment.
I think people also don't get, because you get this in other parts of life, but people don't see it as grief. So I remember being involved in amateur dramatics when I was in my teens and my 20s. And so we would put, like, you know, like 15, 20 weeks into this production, and it would be the race of the show, and you'd get the show done, you go to the artist, you party, and the day after you felt like absolute crap.
Yeah.
Because suddenly all this thing you've been doing for the last 20 weeks is gone, finished.
And
the people are gone. People you met are gone.
And we grieve all loss. We grieve everything, exactly as you just said. So, and sometimes people get really quite shirty and defensive about that. And the way I explain it is, when we talk about, I love my husband, I love my job, I love my friends, I love steak, or whatever your thing is, no one ever says, well, you know, it's not the same as love for us. I know, because everyone knows that romantic love is different to your love for steak or your love for your job. But somehow, as soon as it's grief, it can only mean somebody died. Well, it's not true. There are as many types of grief as there are types of love.
Yeah.
So when something ends, we grieve it. Even that moment, you know, where you go for that last chocolate in the box and it's not there because you had actually really eaten the last one. And it's like, oh, which is mostly disappointment. But you know, that's a little grieving event right there. And actually, of course, Rolo made a very successful advertising campaign out of the whole, you give someone your last one?
Because
we recognise that feeling of, oh, I thought I had one more. You know, that ending thing, we grieve all loss.
I mean, redundancy, I guess, is a grieving process as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you're now being rejected. So you've got, and you can't go back. So there's a loss there. Wow.
Yeah, all that loss of familiarity, your co-workers, the patterns of behaviour are there. Retirement, another grief event. Even if you're really looking forward to being able to play as much golf as you want or whatever your thing is, your co-workers aren't there, your routines aren't there. You've got to rebuild. So even positive events. So I remember when I married Kevin back in 1986, and he was 21 and I was 20, and we managed to get a council house in Milton Keynes on the strength of his job, and it had come through 2 weeks before the wedding, so we just had this empty council house. So we got married, so we moved from Stevenage to Milton Keynes. So I left home, got married, and my transfer, because I was still working for the bank at that point, came through. So I left Stevenage branch and went to a Milton Keynes branch. Everything in my life changed on that day. Everything. And afterwards, I couldn't understand why I was miserable when I got everything I wanted, which was my own home and the man I loved.
Well, yeah,
now,
of course,
I realised I was grieving my Stevenage home life, my Stevenage home, my co-workers in Stevenage. Everything had changed. Familiar pattern of behaviours had all changed out of all recognition. And it took me a long time to adjust to that. And I now know it was grief. And I think if more people could just use the right word, grief, because if you use the right words, then you could use the right behaviours to do something about it. Well, if you're just calling it stress or depression or whatever, misdiagnose, you mistreat. So one of my missions is helping people realise, yeah, we grieve all loss. And it's not about comparing. It's not saying that, you know, I'm a bit sad I didn't get that last chocolate because actually my husband swooped in and ate it before. Of course, it's not the same as somebody dying. In the same way as saying I love chocolate is not the same as saying I love my husband. We just need to get our head around that it can all work and no one's minimizing anyone else's pain when we use those words. Mm. That's kind of my side mission, is getting people to realize that grief is everywhere. And if we acknowledge it as such, look at what we've had in this last year. Massive loss of connection, loss of social life, loss of normality, loss of safety, feeling safe just to nip to the shops. So massive loss. And someone referred to grief as the shadow pandemic. And I think they're onto something there, that we've got lots and lots of unresolved grief milling around and no one's calling it that. So we're going to be through some turbulent times, I think, coming as the emotional fallout of everything that's gone on in the last 18 months starts to catch up with us, which is why I'm very much about helping people realize that these feelings that they don't know what to do with are grief, and they're normal.
Mm.
They're not faulty. They're normal.
So going back to your story, your situation, obviously you started doing all this stuff. What happened? What changed to you? How did your life unfold from there?
The interesting thing, the grief recovery really helped me re-engage with life rather than just existing day after day.
Did you keep the big house? Did you keep the big house?
I did keep the big house. I did keep the big house. And I thought about moving to a much smaller house. And then just the thought of moving on my own was fairly horrific. So I'd play with the idea of moving, and then I like my neighbours and I like the house and everything. So for a few years, and I basically learned how to be on my own, because remember, I left home and got married at 20. So I didn't live on my own at any point.
No.
So I part of that transition, if you like, was learning how to be an adult on my own, because I've never done that before. Mm. And also, heaven help us, start then thinking about, well, you know, I'm only 40. I like men. I like male company. I'd quite like to meet someone else. And the reality is I'm going to have longer without him than I had with him. I do want to meet someone else. Oh, my God. Dating in the 21st century. That's a whole different podcast, boy, I have to say that. What is it that makes men on dating sites just hold giant fish and think that's sexy? I can tell you guys, if you're listening, it really isn't. Anyway, so the whole dating thing was a living nightmare. But anyway, I kind of stumbled my way through that. And actually, for a couple of years, I went through a period of, I didn't date anybody. I'd kind of had my fingers burned badly. I learned how to be on my own, enjoyed being on my own and have my own space in a stupid big house. And then someone who I'd met through business networking, who'd become a supplier, suddenly, you know, how we had a meeting and it was just like, hang on a minute. So I invited him for dinner.
Wonderful.
Ian, so as a result of that, kind of a relationship blossomed, and in 2015 we got married. The year before we got married, we did move house. I did sell the house because it was one of those situations where I thought it was my house and Ian thought it was Kevin's house.
Yes.
So I thought, you know what, new life, new start. So sold house, bought smaller house. I've now been married to Ian for 6 years. I feel incredibly fortunate to have met another fantastic guy to be with. Very different, obviously. And so he now works full-time in Grief UK for me. His losses included his business due to lockdown last year. He was running a forest school, which obviously shut, and we've never reopened it. And he was also, at the same time, had, because I met him because he was a graphic designer, so he was doing my graphic design for me. He'd left that to do the forest school. That was his dream. And so February 2020, talk about bad timing, had decided he was going to start another new graphic design business as well as the forest school. a little bit mindful of not getting any younger, and this thing's quite physically demanding.
Yeah.
So started a graphic design business again, and because it was fledgling, and then no one went to see anything, and everyone, all small businesses were going clamping down on the spending, that stopped as well. Fortunately for us, grief recovery started to do really well in the pandemic, because people were becoming much more aware that there was going to be this huge need for people to help people with bereavement and loss. And partly, there were quite a few people on my database that said, Carol, I've wanted to do your course for years. I've never had the time, and now I'm on furlough, and I'd like to do it now, please. So we went mad busy. So Ian came to work for Grief UK full-time. So now we work full-time together, which is amazing. I feel very privileged. So we are now both working towards getting more people to know that you don't have to live in agony through grief forever. So although the loss will always be there, you can heal your heart and live again, not just merely exist. And to come back to your passion question, that's what I'm really passionate about, Paul, is helping people live, not just function. And having been there in that, just plodding through the day, waiting to go to sleep because it blanks out a few hours. And I don't ever want to have to be there again. And my heart breaks for anyone that's stuck there and then don't know that there's an option and a way to help themselves out of that. And I really noticed the difference 6 years ago. It was actually 2 months before I got married. My mum passed away. And I was very close to mum. And so she had an aortic aneurysm. And they said it would burst and kill her. She'd refused surgery because when she came out from surgery, she'd have to go into a nursing home and she wouldn't be able to go home again. She'd, this thing can kill me. I'm not going into a nursing home. But what actually happened was it didn't burst and kill her. It ruptured. So we were actually looking after her for 9 days before it eventually killed her. And she was like, you're not to cancel the wedding, mum. I'll decide whether I cancel the wedding or not. Nope, I don't want you to. So we had all this, but I had 9 days to talk to her. And because of everything I'd learned in grief recovery, which is you need to say everything that's going on in your heart, by the time she died, I told her everything. And I told her everything that I needed to say, and I thanked her for everything that she'd given me, and we said goodbye, and she passed very peacefully at home, surrounded by loved ones. So she had a beautiful death, which I was very pleased about. And afterwards, I was incredibly, incredibly sad because I really miss her. I still miss her. 6 years on, I still miss her. I miss her wisdom. I miss her cake. I miss her hugs, all of that. But I'm not grieving. Do you remember that definition? I said conflicting feelings. I don't have conflicting feelings. I have simple feelings that are sadness that she's no longer here. And before she died, I could not have articulated to you the difference. Grief, which was agony because of all the, like with Kevin, relieved he wasn't suffering anymore, despair he wasn't here anymore, all that kind of conflicting stuff. That's what caused the agony. But because I'd got to say and deliver all my emotional communications to mum, I was peaceful with it. She got the death she wanted. She was at home. So there was no conflict. It was just beautiful. So I'm sad she's gone. I miss her. Grief recovery don't cure loneliness, okay, because it's not possible. But what it did do is mean that I haven't, you know, got this heartache around mum not being anymore. I'm just sad, but I can talk about her and laugh, or I can talk about her and cry. It depends what mood I'm in on the day, but I haven't got any pain.
I think it's fascinating about this sort of stuff is that I was never, this podcast started as a result of my father passing. And it wasn't about me being sad for his passing. It was about me recognizing where he was and the fact that he was unhappy with living. And I recognized I was very similar. And I thought, whoa, I've got 30 more years or so to go. If it's as bad as this for the next 30 years, I can understand why Dad went where he did, because I ain't going to get any better. So this is why I started exploring it. But one thing about it is I never had that great a relationship with my father. We were always quite distant with each other. We just didn't really connect on some level. I don't think I understood him. I don't think he understood me. But I have a much because of what I did with the podcast and everything else, I kind of have a different relationship with my dad now. It's really strange.
It's kind of, I get why you use the word strange, but also to me, it's like normal.
It's like I never thought I'd have this. So now it's like when he passed, because I got, I cleared his house out, and so I've got a garage for the tools and bits and pieces. And every time I pick one of these tools, I go, "Thanks, Dad." And I have a conversation with him with this tool that I'm using, and I think of him using it, and it's like, and I can get quite emotional when I think about that. So I understand what you say about that relationship with your mom.
And here's the thing, because the relationship continues, as you've just said, and it changes and evolves, even though they've been gone however long, because they're still there in our hearts, we carry them forever. And I think what grief recovery has taught me is to say it while you get the chance, but also if there's things that you haven't said when you got the chance, they can still be said afterwards. And that's what the grief recovery method does, is allow us to say things that we didn't get to say. And the other thing that I've really learned that's important is that we can grieve what we refer to as less than loved ones. Because, this whole thing of, like you just said, you didn't have a fabulous relationship with your dad, but there's still grief there. Mm. Some people have incredibly, incredibly appalling relationships with people that should have been loving that weren't, and then get flawed when they died because there's big overwhelming feelings. And I thought, well, it can't be grief because I hated him. I didn't love him, hated him. But back to that definition, conflicting feelings following a change or end in a familiar pattern behavior, then gives those people who had difficult relationships permission to feel how they feel, because it's not about love at all. It's about conflicting feelings, undelivered communications. And as soon as they die, it ends you of the possibility of reconciliation,
or
even the ability to thump them one, because that's what you always wanted to do and you never got around to it, and now you can't. I've had clients say that they really frustrated that dad died before they got the chance to really tell them what they thought, in a negative way, not in a loving way. So it's all of that. Grief isn't the price of love. Grief is undelivered communications of an emotional nature and a normal human feeling that we all experience after anything. We lose anything.
I also guess some of the reasons why there's so much difficulty with this nowadays is that we've lost touch with death.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
We've so lost touch with it. I would imagine 100 years ago, everybody knew someone died this week. 100 years ago, no, more than 100 years ago. I mean, talking like the late 1800s. Death was such a part of life. It was a daily occurrence, and you knew someone had died. Oh, someone's died this week. Oh, yeah. And everyone would be dealing with someone's death constantly. So, and I don't know whether they dealt with it any better than we do now, because they wouldn't have some of the understandings that we do, but it was normal.
It was more normal, and it was, you're right, it's much more part of everyday life. What happens is now hardly anyone dies at home anymore. It used to be that people...
I tell you how it worked. They worked it out, because they would have the big wake, wouldn't they? Their body would be somewhere and everyone would be howling around the body. They would really process the emotions around it.
Yeah, and physically see the body. So the whole thing around disbelief, because you've seen the body right there, where now death almost always happens in hospital. As if it's an abnormal thing. But actually death is inevitable. We are all going to die as much as
we
can.
Yeah, we're not going to get out of this world alive, are we?
No, we're not getting out of here alive. but it happens in hospital, and then they're swept away almost instantly and taken away and then delivered to the funeral home. And many relatives just don't see them. Next, they see someone in hospital bed, and then they see a box. So yes, this whole, and then it's not talked about, and this whole thing about, everything has to be positive. So the other thing that I struggle with, this is my sort of like pet peeve at the minute, because there's been some TV adverts for some large chains of funeral homes, that are all about, it's a life celebration, and, we're celebrating life, and, it's going to be a party. And which is fantastic if they lived to 90 odd and had a full and fulfilling life and, you know, died peacefully at home. But frankly, there are some occasions where you can't celebrate. You know, when my husband died, he was 41. I was not in the mood for celebrating. So while we honoured his life and his existence, the idea that anyone would tell me, don't wear black, was anathema to me. So when we threw out these old traditions of, you know, deep mourning, you know, you wore widow's weeds, black for however long, and then you would move to lilac and greys before moving to a brighter tint. You know, there was this prescribed timeline on the colours you could wear. All of that, I think we chucked the baby out with the bathwater when we did away with a lot of those customs, because again, it's about giving people permission to say, I actually, when I was first widowed, wanted, you know, in the old days, the guy with the red flag in front of the motor car, I felt I needed someone in front of me with a flag waving going, look out, grieving person, be careful. Mm. Because even now you don't get to wear black afterwards. You barely even get to wear black at the funeral, because this whole trend for, oh, it's got to be positive, it's got to be a life celebration. So allow people to be what it needs to be for them.
Mm.
Message, don't.
Because in the Jewish tradition, don't they? The Jews, they tear clothes, don't they? They do something like that.
I'm not sure about that. There's lots of talking. In most cultures, there's lots of sitting around talking about the person who died for a prescribed amount of time, which is healthy, sharing memories, good and bad. And again, it's about communicating, isn't it? It's about talking about how we feel. But equally, you know, now it seems to be you've got to put a brave face on it, and which has always been around, stiff upper lip and all that. Got to be strong, got to put a brave face on it. And this constant pressure to be positive.
Mm.
And that's just another thing to deal with on top of all your grief as well.
So it sounds like you've got a thriving project in front of you with you. How do you measure success in something like this in your life? Well, no, twice. How do you measure success in that? And then I'll add more to that conversation.
Well, essentially, I run a training company that... At the end of the day, I run training courses. The training course happens to be in how to be a grief recovery specialist, and those people go and take people through the grief recovery method. So I measure success by how many training courses I'm filling.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this year, last year, I trained almost double the number of people that I trained the year before. So I'm calling myself successful mm-hmm. at the moment. A second trainer, I trained her a few years ago. I'm currently training the third trainer. So we're growing. So that's how I measure the success of that, is in how many specialists we are training so that more people get help. The mission globally, because I do this under license from the US, the global mission is greatest number of grievers helped, shortest possible time.
Mm.
The more people I train, the more people I help indirectly. So,
what does success mean to you, though? Because that's a financial success. That's a company success, a global company success. What about you?
Success, Carol? Means peace. I have a peaceful heart. So the business success means that I'm kind of quite peaceful with the way I'm spending my days. Mm. Really... The success is I have a great relationship with Ian. Mm. And even though we work together, he does have his own office. I couldn't have him in the same room all day. That would drive me insane. how do people work together? Oh, we don't work that closely together. So in the evenings, so we have, I have some special friends. I have, you know, like most people, decimated social life at the minute, but I have a lovely home, lovely pets. We've got three dogs between us that I adore. So for me, it's this peace, and I am comfortable in my own skin because I'm spending my days doing something that makes a difference to other people's lives. And I have a great relationship. So really, that's where I'm successful, is mm-hmm. because I have good friends and good relationships around me. And it's peaceful heart. That's the two words I think sums it up. There's nothing, yeah, we all have niggles, you know, and there are frustrations and all those things that happen in business, you know, like today, because we had a flood at the office at Christmas, you know, the insurance coming up for renewal, and that's all proving a little bit challenging, you know, so you just know you get an insurance claim, that's how much your premium's going to go up by. So those sorts of daily irritations, but actually that's surface.
Yes.
Under that, I'm pleased with where my business is. I'm pleased with where my relationship is. I'm pleased with where my life is. It's peaceful.
How do you see your contribution to the world? It's an obvious question and an obvious answer, but I would put it out there for you.
My contribution to the world is anyone that just realizes that they don't have to struggle in silence as a result of something I've done, then I've been successful. And that's my contribution, is to help a few hundred or a few thousand more people have more peaceful hearts than they would have done otherwise had I not done this work.
Do you have a contribution to yourself?
I think it's in following my passion. And I remember when I hit my 30s, you know, and I had this fabulous career, and I think at the time I was in the top 7% of female earners, which sounds fantastic until you put it in context of top earners, and then suddenly you take men's salary and go nowhere. But nevertheless, I had a flipping good material lifestyle in my 30s. So it was one of those, and we had the big house and had the convertible Mercedes, you know, I had all the material stuff, and I wasn't happy. And that's, I think, why when this big thing happened, I identified that what I really wanted was food for my soul, not food for my bank account. And that's what I have now, is food for my soul. And I'm, you know, very fortunate, you know, I've got a nice roof over my head, blah, blah, blah. But my soul is being fed on a daily basis. And if it ever stops doing that, this work, I will stop.
I have to say, this work does that for me. I get fed every day when I'm doing this sort of work, when I'm having these conversations.
And that's, isn't that a fantastic feeling?
Oh, yeah. When I say to someone, this is my day job, I kind of go, I really have to pinch myself.
Yeah, it's like, how did I do this? How do I? Someone's going to catch me soon. Be real. And you know, it took a long, long time before the business was financially stable. You know, I had a lot of years where I was, you know, I was paying the company, not the company paying me, and I was putting money into it for years. And we've only really in the last couple of years turned that corner so that it can actually pay me for a change. But it didn't matter. And there were times where I seriously got close to closing the doors. Very, very, very close. And a couple of years ago, in one January, I, you know, within millimetres of going, enough. And it was only Ian saying, you can't stop, you're too good at this. And I went, I don't want to be good at this anymore. I want to do something else that actually pays us money. And he's like, yeah, but you're too good at this. Keep going, it will come. And without that, I would have stopped.
Yeah.
So I haven't done this on my own.
No,
you know,
but we don't do this. It's all about opportunity to grow and work with people, really, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And the message you're spread, and the message you're spreading is a priceless message. I mean, you know, you're doing positive good in the world, because what the work that you do it's not just about grief counseling or grief. It's about everything in life. It's about living a good life in a way.
Absolutely, because if you've got a peaceful heart, everything changes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And if you're dragging around a load of unresolved grief, you can't be peaceful. Yeah. You can't be peaceful. So yeah. I want to give people peace, and it's a joy to give people peace.
So my next question is the feeder question, but because it's that question that you get to set effectively. So what is the one question I didn't ask you? That's what you could ask. What is the one question you want people to ask you?
How is this different to traditional ways
That's a nice question, actually. Yeah, how is it? Because a lot of people go into grief counselling, as I remember it being called, or some kind of grief therapy. What's the difference?
The key difference is therapy is amazing for discovering why you feel stuck or why you feel a certain way. And it's a great way to explore your feelings and look at them and understand how you got to where you are. And so therefore you can kind of work your way forwards.
Yeah.
And kind of what I've called discovery, discovering why I feel the way I feel. In grief recovery, it's more the starting point is I know why I feel bad. Something bad happened.
Mm.
And so instead of exploring and analyzing, what we're saying is, okay, you're having these feelings, which are normal because something bad happened. Here's a set of steps that you can take in order to resolve those unresolved feelings and move forward with the rest of your life. So it's teaching a life skill.
Mm-hmm.
And I refer to it as driving lessons for your heart. So it's a life skill. And then once you've got it, you can use it again and again and again for when the next loss happens.
That last chocolate.
Yes, exactly. or whatever the thing is. So you've got that. You've got that. You can, you know, no matter what happens, you can still drive your heart.
Yes.
Unlike the traditional route where you then go back and see your therapist.
Yes.
So therapy is fabulous for many, many things. So this is different. It serves a different function. So we're not competing with it or denigrating it in any way. I'm just saying this is a very different approach, which has meant that people who otherwise wouldn't get any help at all have had help and found peace.
So what are you looking for from the podcast? What are you looking for people? You know, my listeners are UK and Europe and US. So there, is it, do they get in touch with you or the organization? What are you looking for?
The main thing really is A, that people know we exist. The most heartbreaking thing for me is people saying, I wish I'd known about this years ago.
Right.
So now your listeners know we exist. Fantastic. If they want to know a bit more than that, absolutely can reach out. Via the website, you can ring our office or book a call with me. In my online diary, find out more about the method and how it can help them. Or if they're inspired to help others too, I can talk to them about how to do that. But my biggest motivation genuinely is education, letting people know that they don't have to suffer in pain in silence, that there is an alternative to the traditional talking therapies, and they don't have to suffer if they don't want to.
So how would they, there's a website for this? What would the website be?
Yes, griefuk.org.
Okay. And they can find you on social media?
They can find me on social media. Facebook is Grief Recovery UK.
Yep.
Instagram, I think we're Grief UK. Twitter, we're Grief UK. I'm on LinkedIn as well, Grief UK or Carol Henderson. So you can find me.
You're everywhere. All those links will be available at the website Life, Passionate and Business, and they will be on this podcast app above me or below me. I can never remember where. So please do check out Carol Henderson because, gosh, she's amazing. She does lovely work and she's really nice to talk to as well. She's very easy to talk to, I have to say.
Good. I've enjoyed it as well.
So, Carol, my last question, which is the big one, which you know, is the question that we all need to find an answer to, maybe, or maybe we don't. I don't know. What's the meaning of life for you?
The meaning of life? Ooh, that is the big one, isn't it? And I show my age if I say 42.
Oh, well, 42 has been all over this for years. I used to say 42. Yeah.
I am a big Douglas Adams fan.
Yeah.
For me, the meaning of life all comes down to your relationships. It's about living in connection with others. We are herd animals. We need to be around others. And now while there are times we need to be on our own, really it's about building not thousands of relationships that, you know, social media, I've got 5,000 friends, it's nonsense. It's about having a number of meaningful relationships that build that connection, that connect us to everyone else, to other humans. And that's what it's all about, is great relationships. And they take work. Mm. One thing that the method has given me is an ability to have a great relationship with Ian, because I've completed my relationship with Kevin. So I'm not bringing stuff from that relationship into this one. So that meaning is all around my brother, my husband, my close friends, my colleagues here. I've got an amazing team here. I've got team, three employees, and then a kind of expanded freelance team as well. That's what's given my life meaning, people.
Carol Henderson, thank you so much for sharing this image today. It's been a real joy to have this conversation, and thank you for the work that you do in the world, because I think it's incredibly valuable.
You're extremely welcome, and thanks for talking to me. I've had an absolute ball as well this morning.
All the best.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Carol Henderson. Now, if you'd like to connect with Carol, you can find her website at griefuk.org. She's also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and YouTube. And all of those links, you can find them at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. Now, look, I know this is a sensitive subject, and it particularly is at this time of year, because if you know someone who's lost a loved one this year, the approaching family season can be the most difficult time for them. So do visit the website griefuk.org. There is an ebook resource there that could help you support them during this difficult time. So that's it from me this week. So thank you, as always, for being with me on this journey. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it with a friend. If you feel inclined to write a comment or give us a review, that is most appreciated. Anyway, as always, thank you so much for your time and attention, and I'll catch you next time. All the best.